Welcome to Tu'ati Mecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and this week we have a double reading of Parashat Nazria and Parashat Metzora. Imagine there's a way to connect to immortality. Imagine you could step beyond the limits of time and embrace eternity. This is the Jewish definition of purity. Purity isn't just white doves, gurgling babies, and free-flowing spring waters. Purity is the deepest essence of a person, a heightened awareness of our spirituality. It's the ability to identify ourselves not just as a body that moves through life, but as a soul connected to Hashem, the eternal source of all. And if the book of Vayikra has been teaching us anything, it's that this connection isn't random. It has a rhythm, a structure, a choreography of the soul. There are moments when we move in sync, like a dancer completely at one with the music, where every movement feels natural, effortless, almost lifted. And then there are moments when the rhythm breaks. We are disconnected, heavy, even disoriented. When we're no longer moving with the music, we're stumbling through it. Because impurity, as its core, is about being blocked. It's about a loss of connection to the source of life. Parashat Tazria and Metzora are about those moments. What happens when we fall out of step and how we find our way back into the dance. There's a reality beyond what we can see or fully understand. People are drawn to the idea of other worlds, other dimensions. It taps into something very deep in us. This sense that there's more to existence than what meets the eye. That ability to imagine and relate to something unseen is actually one of the great strengths of the human mind. And the Torah tells us that this isn't just imagination, it's real. There's a whole dimension of purity and impurity of our connection to Hashem. We may not fully grasp it with our limited perspective, but the Torah wants us to know that it exists and that awareness itself is a powerful and important part of how we live. Purity is not a physical state, but a deeply spiritual concept, one that ultimately belongs to that esoteric realm that we cannot fully grasp. At the same time, it's not detached. It's reflected in our world and carries real consequences, just as our actions here reverberate in the spiritual worlds. Describing it in our own limited terms, we'll try to approach it in a way that makes it meaningful and accessible, moving beyond the mystery to uncover what it asks of us. We can begin to explore not just what purity is, but the transformative message that it holds for how we live. First and foremost, the deepest, most real idea. We need to know this idea to survive and thrive. Every person has a soul that is indestructible. It is completely spiritual. It's a part of that esoteric world, a part of Hashem. It is each of our own inner godliness. It can never be sullied, dirty, or ruined. Even this idea of impurity doesn't touch our essence. We need to focus when we remind ourselves every morning, Elokai, my God, the soul that you have placed within me, Neshama shenatata bi, tehorahi, it is pure. Each and every day, forever and always. The body houses the soul, and only when connected we're a human being. Our physical actions either bring our soul's light to the forefront or blocks it. The more clarity we have, the brighter our souls shine. Negative actions and experiences block the light of our soul, and we get more confused, more off purpose. But the soul itself is untouchable, impenetrable. It's super important to know that nothing you could have ever done in your past, nothing that anyone has done to you, nothing can affect your soul. We need to tap into the purity of godliness in everyone. The soul itself is always pure. When the soul is in the body, life becomes movement. It's like music entering time. It has rhythm, structure, highs and lows, and purity is when the movement is aligned, when we're dancing with the music. There are three elements that are necessary for a person to live in purity. Purity of a person is when, one, we have clarity of our soul, two, we recognize our personal goals and purpose, and three, we're able to see a clear path how to get from where we are today to our goal. An example from achieving in the physical world, a marathon. If I want to run the marathon, first, I need to know myself, my BMI, how fit I am. Then, two, the goal, the marathon itself, the distance, the angle of the hills, where the water stops will be. And three, I need to work out a training plan, buy new sneakers. With marathons, I will never be pure, so to speak, because I don't have any of these three. But even one missing is enough to stop a person from completing a marathon. Let's bring this into our own spirituality. There are three pieces to this. One, know yourself. Sounds simple? It's not. We're often so busy doing, we don't stop to be. We're in danger of becoming human doings, not human beings. Who am I really? What are my strengths, my weaknesses? What inspires me? What drains me? What frustrates? Not surface level, but deep and real. Get to know the real you. Two, my goals. Who I am and what my goals are is very intertwined. Many people never choose their own goals. They get put on a track at 7 or 8 years old, sometimes earlier. This one's sporty. Send them to sports camp. She's artistic, give her painting lessons. She's smart, push her into science. We need a doctor in the family. And before you know it, they're adults living a life they never chose. I knew a family, 4 siblings. The father said to them he was very open-minded. They could go to any law school they wanted. They all became lawyers, joined his practice. We barely blink and we're middle-aged, wondering how we got here. And in crisis, people buy sports cars, go off to the Bahamas. And it's not just careers, it's personalities, character traits too, of course. For example, the oldest in a family is often slotted as the responsible one. The middle child lives up to everyone's expectations, becoming the wild one or the quiet one. And the youngest, the sweet, cuddly one. But who am I really? And this next step, who do I actually want to become? Because if I'm not naturally so kind, I need to work on that. Maybe I give too much and I lose myself. Maybe I want to be calmer, more patient, less reactive. First, who am I? Second, what do I wish for myself? What's my potential? Who can I truly aspire to become? And then 3, a clear path. Now that we have a starting point and an end goal, you need a plan. How will I develop to become the person I know I can be, to accomplish what I was put into this world to accomplish? My husband remembers clearly in Yeshiva High School, every day at Shacharis, the students were encouraged to give a coin to tzedakah. Rabbi Belrwein was the Rosh Yeshiva and explained that even though these coins didn't make a dent in Yeshiva expenses, it was a training process. We want our students to become givers, he said. That's the goal. So in high school, we teach to give a penny, a quarter, then a dollar, then a check, and then $10,000. Need to have a goal and train to get there. Same with impatience, with anger. It's a journey. That's our soul's journey. 3 movements in a symphony flowing in harmony. Who am I today? My growth goals and a self-development plan. When I move to this rhythm, I have clarity in how to maximize myself. The soul shines purely when all 3 elements are in place. Impurity is anytime anything blocks any of these 3 things. If I'm missing any of them, then my soul won't shine. I won't be the best me. I won't achieve what my soul is meant to achieve in this world. I won't shine because there are blocks stopping my light from emerging into the world. When that rhythm breaks, it's like the music stops mid-symphony. We lose our place in the movement. The Torah calls those moments tuma. Let's look at some Torah examples. Most examples only apply when the temple was built in Jerusalem. Since the destruction, none of these laws are kept except family purity. The greatest level of impurity is death. This is actually taught in Sefer Bamidbar. When a person dies, there's no more doing. They're at whichever goal they have reached by then, and there's nothing left to achieve. There's a complete unchangeable block. That's extreme tumah. It's really interesting that a person becomes impure by coming into contact with death. Death is meant to stop us in our tracks, to make us pause and say, wait, that could be me. What about my life? What's my purpose? I have to accomplish it. To the extreme, we see that death actually does stop people. After 9/11, you couldn't tear your eyes away from watching the images again and again. The world stopped. It was a total block. But then life went back to normal. COVID, the whole world stopped again. We were reminded what's essential. What are my key issues? But everyone kept wanting to go back to normal. Such a shame. We could have had a new normal. October 7th. Here, I think we all saw our nation emerge from the shock. The greatness of the Jewish people as a whole and of each individual came out so brightly. People stepped up everywhere, volunteering, giving, rebuilding, cooking, supporting, tehillim, mitzvos, the hostage forum, constant effort for others. Outside of Israel, as anti-Semitism reared its ugly head again, I was and continue to be amazed and inspired by our younger generation. They stand up day after day amongst their non-Jewish peers, both in person and online, fighting for truth, reminding the world that to be Jewish is to be honest and wholesome and good, to shine even brighter, to be proud of our nation. There's newfound clarity of purpose. Horrors of impurity have led to the new dance of purity. Long may it continue. Many people feel this impurity on a personal level when they lose someone close. Person's sense of self is shaken. Until now, you were someone's child, a sibling. Our family is our foundation. It shapes who you are. And suddenly, after this loss, I don't even know who I am. It takes time to refocus, to redefine yourself, to rebuild. Coming into contact with death makes you impure. Encountering death puts up a block. It's meant to stop us in our tracks, to stop and think, analyze and reassess, and rebuild sense of self and purpose. In our parsha, the Torah describes the phenomenon of tzalat, how to recognize it and how the Kohen responds to it. Here, the disconnection isn't just internal. It shows up in how we move through relationships, like stepping out of sync with a communal dance. Chazal reveal the inner layer, that tzarat is a physical expression of a spiritual flaw, most classically, Lashon Hara. When people first learn about Lashon Hara, it blows them away. Intuitively, we know that Lashon Hara eats away at the very fabric of our communities. To build a society where people don't speak about each other? Wow, mind-blowing. But there are many negative behaviors that don't create impurity. Why here? Why does Lashon Hara create tuma for both the speaker and the listener? Psychologically, what's going on when we speak badly about someone? I think at its core, what we're really saying is that negative thing that they are, I'm not that. When someone says, "Did you hear what he did to get that promotion?" what they're really saying is, "I would never do that." When they say, "How could she wear that?" translation, "I would never be caught dead in that." Or maybe even, "I wish I had it first." Two ways to get to the top. You can put up a ladder and slowly climb rung by rung, or you can push everyone else down and stand on them. When we put someone else down to lift ourselves up, that's not a real sense of self. If I'm standing on you, if I need to push you down to feel elevated, that's not identity, that's insecurity. The Kotzka Rebbe says, if I am I because you are you, and you are you because I am I, then I am not I, and you are not you. Only when I am I because I am I, and you are you because you are you, then I am truly I, and you are truly you. Purity starts with knowing myself. I need to know what I am. When we lose that, when our sense of self depends on diminishing someone else, we fall out of rhythm. And instead of each of us playing our part, we disrupt the entire symphony. That is impurity. A woman's cycle can be understood as a moment where potential shifts. There was a certain capacity for life, and now that possibility is no longer present in the same way. It's not something we usually think about day to day, but it quietly reflects a deeper rhythm within the body. In that sense, the Torah's framework invites us to pay attention, to recognize that the body isn't incidental, but meaningful. Contemporary society is catching up, so to speak, to ancient Jewish wisdom through modern science and psychology, becoming more aware and in tune with women's bodies, learning to work with them rather than ignore or override them. Seen this way, purity isn't about limitation. It's about awareness and respect for the depth of what the body represents. For women especially, it can be understood as a quiet appreciation of the body's capacity for life. And when we do speak about it, especially to the next generation, it can be with a sense of wonder that the human body carries within it something truly remarkable. Each month there's this quiet rhythm of possibility and then of release. It's not something dramatic or even always conscious, but it reflects the body's ongoing capacity for life and then the stepping back from that particular potential. The Torah sensitizes us to that shift, inviting awareness where we might otherwise just move on. After childbirth, that idea becomes much more pronounced. Here, it's not just potential, it was actual life, carried and brought into the world. The transition afterwards is deeper, a movement from being the source of that life within to now nurturing it outside. The period of Tuma reflects that shift, that sense of something immense having just taken place and now settling into a new reality. And when a baby girl is born, the Torah describes a longer period. One way to understand this is that a female child carries within her the same life-giving potential. It's as though the presence of future potential for life has expanded even further. So the transition, the shift, is more layered, more extended. Again, these are obviously not measures of value or worth, but expressions of sensitivity to life, potential, and change. The Torah is giving language to experiences that are often invisible, helping us recognize that the body and its quiet processes is part of a much deeper story. Maybe I should have asked you before we started. When I say pure, what does that make you think of? People say, a baby. There's potential for anything and everything with a baby. You can look at a baby and think, wow, what are you going to be when you grow up? You have the potential to be a rabbi, an astronaut, both. Life is just beginning. Funnily enough, almost as soon as they start to move, we say, stop, that's too high, you can't do that, it's dangerous. Societal norms put block after block, but the essence of a baby is purity. And in thinking of purity, people give the example of water. Water is pure, except where I live in Manhattan, the Hudson River doesn't evoke a sense of purity at all. But water, it's the beginning of the world. Actually, before the beginning of the world, Ruach Elokim merachefet al pnei ha-mayim, the Spirit of Hashem hovers over the face of the waters. Waters, it's the impetus of everything. Rivers flowing out from the Garden of Eden. Water takes you to the beginning of time and space. Water is eternal. Heat it, it becomes steam. Cold, and it freezes to ice, but it stays forever. My husband and I traveled to the fjords of Norway. You stand on a glacier of snow and ice, looking up at a sky of water. You're enveloped in foreverness. And at the base of the mountains, the ice melts into rivers. They say it takes hundreds of years from the moment rain falls, freezes into ice, and finally becomes flowing water again. You stand at the base of the mountain, you cup the water in your hands, and you feel you've moved beyond time and space. Water is the source of all life. You can live longer without food, but you need water. We can't live without water, but we can't live in water, except mermaids, of course. The only time we have life in water is a baby before it's born. The source of everything is water, but potential starts when a baby is born out of the water into the world. When we go to the mikveh, we're stepping back to the source. For a moment, we return to a place that is whole, untouched, full of possibility, and then we come back out because life is meant to be lived here. But we don't come back the same. We come back a little more aligned, a little more aware of who we are and what we're capable of. There's something very quiet but powerful happening. We let go of what was and reconnect to our deeper self. It brings a renewed sense of direction, of purpose, of where we want to go. That's why before a wedding we go to the mikveh. It's the beginning of something new. Not just two people coming together, but the creation of something shared, full of potential, with so many paths ahead. And after times of distance, whether it's tzarat, when a person experienced separation, or the natural cycles of the body where potential shifts, the mikveh gently brings a person back. It restores a sense of rhythm, of connection to my soul, of being ready to re-engage with life and with others in a deeply spiritual way. Mikveh is about renewal. It's a quiet reminder that we are defined by the eternal soul within us, that we can return, reset, and move forward with clarity. It's like being part of a larger symphony. There are moments of sound and silence, tension and release, movement and stillness, and together they create something whole. In the same way, our lives move through different states, and each one has a place in the greater harmony. Mikveh helps us step back into that rhythm, to realign with the music of who we are and how we're meant to live. Purity is about tapping into all the goodness of the soul within you and recognizing that you are capable of the most incredible things. It's a moment of clarity and renewal, of honoring your depth, your strength, and your potential, of dreaming big and planning on doing it all. We step back into life with that awareness and reclaim the dance of purity.